You are Locked On Orioles, your daily podcast on the Baltimore Orioles, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Out of the jam, getting the ground ball double play in the 10th. Deep left field, Adam Jones, and goodbye, home run! A game winner for the Orioles center fielder, and they win the opener 3-2.
Yo, yeah.
Folks, that's how you start a baseball season. The Orioles win on opening day on a walk-off homer from Adam Jones. And the Camden Yards crowd goes home happy. There's 161 more of these things, but the first one was an awful lot of fun. That's three straight opening day walk-off wins for the Orioles, which is an all-time Major League record. And it's also the eighth straight opening day the Orioles have won. So opening day has become a really special thing for Orioles fans. No matter how the rest of the season goes, we're always going to have this. In case I haven't mentioned it, you're listening to Locked On Orioles, your place for Orioles news and analysis from the clubhouse to the warehouse and beyond. And I'm your host, Justin McGuire. Today we're joined by Jake English. He's a co-host of the Orioles podcast, Bird's Eye View. And he and I are going to break it down for you in just a second. First, just my daily reminder, we are on Apple Podcasts, we're on Stitcher, and we're on Google Play. So whatever your podcast app of choice is, please go and subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. The more ratings, the more reviews, and the more subscriptions we get, the bigger the audience we're going to get, and that's going to help us keep doing the podcast. Also, you can find us on LockedOnOrioles.com. Right now, that's where all the episodes live, and eventually we're going to start having more original Orioles content. More details on that later. You can follow us on Twitter, and I hope you do so because we're closing in on 500 followers. It's at LockedOnOrioles. And as always, we welcome emails. So please send those to LockedOnOrioles@gmail.com. You can suggest topics and guests. You can send mailbag questions. Or if you're interested in advertising on Locked On Orioles, that's the place to get in contact with us. As I said, guys, it was a memorable opening day at Camden Yards, and we're going to talk about it in depth with Jake English. Let's get going. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Locked On Orioles. We are joined now by Jake English. He is a co-host of the Orioles podcast Bird's Eye View, which is something you should be listening to if you're not already. And I can tell you that my son listens to it, and he says it's his favorite Orioles podcast, despite the fact that I'm doing one now. So I'm not sure quite how to take that, but I guess, Jake, you should take it as a compliment. So welcome to the podcast.
Well, thanks very much for having me. And, you know, there's no accounting for some people's taste, but I think that family support, just goes around and comes around, because I can tell you my wife does not listen to my podcast. She refuses. So as long as he's listening to you, you know, you're off to a good start.
Oh, yeah. My wife, that's a whole other story. I won't get into that one, because I finally got her to listen to my other podcast, Baseball by the Book, but I don't think she's listened to this one yet. So anyway, Jake, you were out at Camden Yards today. And when I say today, we're recording this on Thursday evening, and people will be listening to it on Friday. But you were out for opening day, and obviously it turned out to be a very memorable game. But can you just tell me, what was the atmosphere like out there? I know it's always a lot of fun at Camden Yards on opening day. Was it a pretty good atmosphere even before the walk-off?
Absolutely. I mean, here's the thing. For me, and you know, I apologize because I've got nothing left as far as a voice is concerned, but for me, opening day is a holiday. And as cheesy as that sounds, the whole day just had a different flavor to it. Even the weather decided to behave itself here in Baltimore. The sun came out more than it was supposed to. The temperature was beautiful. And, you know, everybody in the city was just excited. So for me, I go down in the morning, start with breakfast and go on through the game and then throughout afterward. And there's just a different vibe to opening day. Once we got to the stadium, it was interesting because Camden Yards never really seemed full, but you can never tell if that's because there are a lot of people milling about on the concourse and on Utah Street and the rooftop deck and all the other opportunities that the Orioles have made in the stadium for fan engagement. So I can't tell if opening day this year was less well attended, despite the fact that it was announced sellout, or if it was just that people were, not necessarily in their seats for the whole game. So the only thing that was a little different for me anyway was that it seemed less full than in some opening days prior. But yeah, as far as the game's concerned, couldn't ask for much more other than, maybe one inning from an Orioles pitcher.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll get to that inning in a minute. How about just in terms of, you mentioned some of the amenities at the stadium and everything. Is there anything new that people should be aware of, that, you know, in terms of, you know, fan things or restaurants, bars, anything new this year?
Yeah, not anything new worth mentioning. I think for fans that are used to going to the stadium, I think that the real difference maker this year is going to be how the Orioles' new promotion for children turns out. I just can't praise the Orioles enough for making it so that you can take children to the ballpark for free if you want to go ahead and sit in the upper deck. I'm curious to see how that promotion will work out this year. And I think if they're having games with more kids attending, they'll probably work things out so that there are more kid-friendly either events or amenities at the ballpark than you're used to seeing. But as far as just your standard average fare fan for opening day and afterward, you know, it was pretty much what we've come to expect, which is by no means a bad thing.
I was interested to know, like, when they introduced Manny Machado, what was the reaction like? Because obviously everyone knows this is likely his last opening day with the Orioles. And I'm just never quite sure, like, how fans think about that. Do they resent him? Do they blame the Orioles? Like, what kind of reaction did he get when he was announced?
It was warm, but I mean, you remember, this is the fan base that booed Kim down the orange carpet for, you know, refusing to go down the minor leagues. No, he was fine. Everyone's fine. I was interested to see that it seemed like Adam Jones was still the big ovation getter as far as the home crowd is concerned. So he's definitely, you know, the reigning fan favorite.
And somebody else who got a nice ovation from the crowd, they showed this on TV. Well, I guess Cal Ripken was at the game, and they showed him on the big board.
Sure. Yeah. Anywhere Cal Ripken shows up, he'll get a standing ovation. But yeah, it's always good to see him at the ballpark.
All right. So let's talk about the game. One thing I was interested in was this idea of Chris Davis as a leadoff hitter, which is something that had been talked about in the last, you know, week or so. A lot of the writers have been writing about it. He had been leading off some in spring training. But I think some people thought maybe, well, that's just a way to get him some at-bats. That's not something that's going to happen in the regular season. But sure enough, the lineup card came out this morning, and he's batting leadoff. Like, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, as far as Chris Davis is concerned, he has to hit somewhere. Well, no, he has to bat somewhere. Whether or not he hits is another thing. I don't really think it matters much where Chris Davis hits, because until he gets himself right, he's not really the impact bat that he once was. And so I think by putting him up top with Machado, Scope, and Jones to follow, the idea is to give him as many good pitches to hit as possible so that he becomes dangerous again. We'll see how that works out. I mean, today, you know, a walk and a strikeout. You know, he didn't have himself a great game, but again, this is the smallest sample size we could possibly have. If they're going to commit to having Davis up front, I don't think it hurts the team by any stretch of the imagination. The only thing I will say is that what he's proven to not have an on-base capability, you know, may be a hindrance for some of these other guys that I just mentioned, you know, Machado straight on through to Mancini to be able to drive in runs. But I don't so much mind Davis up front leading off. This team doesn't have necessarily a prototypical leadoff hitter. And I think baseball is really, you know, struck out against, you know, the prototypical leadoff hitter. You know, the Orioles doesn't really, you know, we don't really have a Brian Roberts anymore, and who does? So for the time being, until, you know, it either proves not to work or, you know, it works so well that he moves elsewhere in the lineup, you know, I'm fine with seeing Davis lead off.
Now, he did not have a good game in the field. That's to me, that's a little more concerning, because, you know, his defense has always been pretty good around first base, and he had two pretty bad plays today, one of which was really key in the fact that the Orioles didn't win this game in 9 innings.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that when Davis struggles at the plate, one of the things that a lot of people go to is, well, he can at least contribute in the field. And I think that Davis has proven himself to be an above-average defender. You know, my partner in crime on Bird's Eye View, Scott Magnus, is the stats guy. And we go back and forth about whether defensive metrics are really reliable just yet. But I do think Davis is a plus defender, and I think that by the time the season's all said and done, we'll see that again. Yes, he had a rough day today, and that's tough to swallow when he's not hitting balls over the wall. But I think that'll round itself out.
Yeah, and honestly, nobody hit great today. I mean, Odorizzi looked really good, and I think the bullpen, for the most part, was pretty good for the Twins. So, you know, I'm not surprised that he didn't hit much. But again, that's the defensive stuff. It's a little worrisome if that keeps up, because if he's not going to be defending well, I don't know how much value he really has if he's going to continue to hit the way he has the last couple of years. And we have five full seasons of him left at this point under contract.
Sure. You know, and hey, maybe just orange carpet jitters.
Yeah. Could be. All right. So let's turn to the starting pitcher in this game. That was Dylan Bundy. And I think every Orioles fan who watched this game has to be extremely happy with the results of what we saw today. He looked really sharp, didn't he?
Absolutely, yeah. And this is a team that, you know, we talk about, we're only going to go as far in Baltimore as the starting rotation will take this team, right? So to see any of the five starters have a good day is always a positive sign, but particularly for Bundy, who we've been waiting for so long to turn into a dominant pitcher. Today, you couldn't have asked for more. You know, seven stellar innings. What looked like, you know, from my vantage point, was working for him was the slider, right? His off-speed stuff is really going to define who he can become. You know, the fastball command is always there, but he doesn't have the absolutely electric fastball like he used to before the injury. The question is going to be, does the changeup, does the slider in tandem with the fastball get him through the game, you know, maybe two or three times through the lineup? And it certainly did today. One of the things that Joseph said in the post game was that the shadows were really playing trouble on the batters today. Not certainly to take anything away from Dylan Bundy, but Caleb Joseph reported that the shadows really helped Bundy today. So whether or not that was a factor or whether he was just trying to keep Bundy's head in check, again, it was a good day, and we hope to see it again in 5 days.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned the slider. Jim Palmer during the broadcast kept talking about the slider, and that really they agreed with your summation, which is that the slider was really the difference maker for him today, and was one of the reason he was so effective. And of course, like you said, that's what we've seen with him when he is effective. That's what he's got going on to go with the other stuff. One of his strengths is that he has several pitches he can pitch effectively, and when they're all going, he's really tough to hit. So again, hopefully we'll see that Dylan Bundy a lot this year, because it was nice to see it on opening day, that's for sure.
Absolutely, and the depth, you know, to see him to get into the seventh inning, that's the thing that this team is going to need. It's going to need innings from its starters. The bullpen is not as flexible from a roster standpoint as it has been in previous Buck Showalter years, and so you're not going to be able to rely on the Norfolk shuttle as often. And one of the things I think that Dan Duquette, regardless of whether or not you think he's the best GM in the world, one of the strengths of Dan Duquette is finding guys like, you know, say a Chaz Rowe, who's the best reliever in baseball for 2 weeks, to be able to come up and, you know, provide useful innings at just the right time when the team needs it. You know, you're not going to be able to do that as much this year. And so to avoid blowing out the guys that are back there, you're going to need to get seven innings from Dylan Bundy more often than not, and set the tone for, you know, the other four starters to give, you know, six, seven innings more often than not.
All right. Well, speaking of the bullpen, Darren O'Day came in the eighth and looked very effective. Very good outing from him. And then, of course, we ran into some trouble in the ninth with Brad Brock. But you can't blame him entirely, because we mentioned the Davis error, which really opened the floodgates in that inning. And honestly, they should have been out of the inning before it got to where it got. But still, Brock, you know, had that that one at bat against Rosario, where he just like 11, 12 pitches, something like that. What are your thoughts on how he handled his role as the closer with Zach Britton on the DL?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think Brock certainly deserved better than what he got today. Yeah, his defense definitely let him down, and what hurt him was the bloop. You know, sure, the bases were loaded, but he didn't get knocked around the park today. Again, we're talking about a single inning of a single game, so I'm not ready to say that he's a bust in the closer position. I will say, however, that when Baltimore has had to turn to Brock in the closing position before, the results haven't always been great. So I'm not convinced that Brad Brock is a full-time closer in the absence of Zach Britton. You mentioned Darren O'Day being fantastic. I wonder, you know, if we'll see more O'Day and Givens in that role, because Brock is an excellent reliever, but he just doesn't seem to have that effectiveness, you know, when the lights come on in the ninth inning. Again, that's a lot of speculation on a single inning, but you're right. He certainly didn't have it. The walks, the defensive errors behind him, and then the bloop. I think it was just a rough outing for him, and again, one of those things that'll even out over 162.
Yeah, and of course, like you said, I mean, part of it is that everything basically went wrong for him. Because, like, on that bloop, I was talking to my son about this. It's like, if there had been one out or no outs, he's, you know, the runners are going to have to hold on that and to see if it drops in. And probably you don't score two runs. You only score one, most likely. But the fact there's two outs, they're running. You know, so everything basically worked against him in that inning. Because the Orioles had a similar bloop situation in the 10th, I think it was, where there were I think, one out at that point. So everybody had to hold, and they only advanced one base. So, you know, it just seemed like things just didn't – were just kind of working against him at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, you know, you hope that he can shrug that off and come back and pitch when it matters for the team because – you know, like I said, they're not going to be able to depend on Zach Britton, you know, for quite some time. And, you know, the options are limited back there. So the Orioles are going to need Brad Brock to be the guy that was a standout and an all-star and a pleasant surprise, you know, coming over from San Diego.
All right. So we talked about this, you know, we just talked about that ninth inning. The Orioles, of course, have the 2-0 lead going into the inning. A couple of things go wrong here and there, but they still have two outs when the bases are loaded, and that happens. So they're still in a position to win the game in the ninth. And, of course, that bloop happens. What was the atmosphere like in the stadium when that happened? Because I know that's like the worst kind of way to lose a game is one that you think you're about to win.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was definitely a little stunned. I mean, you know, the crowd got a case of the murmurs, you know, as runners started getting added to the bases there. But as soon as the bloop happened and the two runs scored, you could hear a pin drop for a while. There was, oh, gosh, here we go again. I don't know if you remember back to, I think it was 2010 or maybe 2011, when Michael Gonzalez gave up a save in the ninth inning on opening day. It was the worst. That was the first thing I thought of was, oh gosh, here we go again.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think with the Orioles, the first thing that went through my mind is, boy, this team cannot afford to lose games that where the starting pitcher goes 7 shutout innings. You know what I mean? Cause
yeah, they can't afford to lose any games, but think again about the fact that the Twins are expected to be one of the teams with whom the Orioles are going to be competing if they're going to hope to be in the wild card race in the AL East. So games against teams like the Twins are important, even if it's opening day in March.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was, you know, 2 years ago they made the wild card game by a game. You know, you just never know which game is going to be the most important one when you come to the end of the year, especially for a team like this, which if they are going to contend at all, it's going to be at the margins of that wild card race. They're not going to win the division by 10 games or anything. So, like you said, every game does count. And that's part of the fun of it. It's also part of what makes it frustrating. But, so speaking of frustrating, then I think also I alluded to this already, but there was that 10th inning situation where they got men on base. They sacrificed Rasmus over to second. They walk Davis to get to Machado. And then he has the little bloop that loads the bases. And they bring the infield in, and then Scope hits the grounder, I think, to third. They get the double play. That's another one where you're thinking they had the chance right there and they blew it.
That was such an interesting inning because, first of all, I mean, the Orioles were in a position today where they were trying to win a baseball game that mattered with guys like Pedro Alvarez, Danny Valencia, Gentry, and Rasmus in the lineup. I mean, what a time to be alive, right? But everything, you know, worked for the Twins in that inning. They had the results and the players where they wanted them. You know, you said that they brought the infield in. They also brought in an outfielder. They brought the left fielder in. And so they had, you know, a full complement of infielders in on the grass, and Scope, you know, just hit it to one of the many men standing there. So, you know, it was well defensed by the Twins. And yeah, it was definitely frustrating because after watching the Orioles give up, you know, the two runs that they had held on to, and then have the opportunity to strike back, you know, it was kind of frustrating to see them go ahead and fail to capitalize. And it's funny because, you know, the Orioles are a bit of an emotional roller coaster. They spend the entire offseason refusing to do anything to make sure that they'll compete. At the very last moment, they go ahead and they get Alex Cobb, which for many of us, you know, that was the best outcome that we could have possibly hoped for. And so then the fan base is up on a high. They're in the high of opening day. And here we go to extra innings, you know, crashing back down. It's, you know, It's rough on the heart when you're an Orioles fan.
Yeah, that's going to be on my grave, I think. That's my gravestone, those words. It's rough on your heart when you're an Orioles fan. It sure is. It sure is. We would be remiss if we didn't mention also that Caleb Joseph drove in the first two runs in this game with a triple. And I made a comment about this on Twitter, but I think the first thing that went through my mind, and I'm sure a lot of other fans' minds, was 2 years ago, Caleb Joseph played, you know, 50-some games, I think, without driving in a run. And here he is having two in his first, on opening day. So it's got to feel good for him to get it out of the way early this year.
Yeah, we talked about that right before his at-bat, too. You know, he was striding to the plate, his name was being called, and we said, we don't need to worry about this because, you know, Caleb Joseph, of all people, is not going to be the one driving the run. And, of course, there he is. Crow is delicious, by the way. It's funny, though, because it seems like the only Orioles that ever hit triples are the guys that are least likely to do it, right? It always seemed like it was the Matt Wieters, the Aubrey Huffs of the world that hit triples for the Orioles. And so, you know, now Caleb Joseph, I guess, has joined that club.
Yeah, the Orioles are not a triple-hitting team. I think that's safe to say. Didn't they set some sort of record for fewest triples in a season or something last year? It was they had a dangerously low amount, I remember.
It will not surprise me.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I think they didn't have a triple until like August or something like that. It was something crazy like that. So that's another thing they got out of the way early. So all in all,
right? They don't have to worry about RBIs from Joseph, and they don't have to worry about triples. And you know, they've won now their first extra inning game. So just marking the things off the list.
That's true. All right, so. Finally, the Adam Jones walk-off. What was the reaction? I think we know what the reaction was, but what was it like in the stadium when that happened?
Oh, it was fantastic. And, you know, I mentioned earlier, you know, Adam Jones getting the warmest reception, him being the fan favorite, as it were. Who else but to deliver? Who else but the captain? You know, here, this may be his last year in Baltimore, and that would be a real shame. But while he's here, I mean, it's interesting that this is still very much his team on a team that has rising stars like Manny Machado and Jonathan Scope. When it mattered the most, who else but Adam Jones? It was great. It was a great way to ease back into Orioles baseball because, you know, these are the moments that we wait for, and he did not disappoint.
Yeah, and I think I saw that before the game, this is his, I think, 11th straight start in center field for the Orioles, and he's second only to Paul Blair in terms of consecutive starts in center, which is pretty good company to be in because, you know, Paul Blair, one of the great defensive center fielders of all time. And I raised this question on Twitter, and I'm not exactly sure how I feel about it, but I think it's time we need to start at least considering the idea that Adam Jones is the, you know, the greatest center fielder in Orioles history overall. I mean, he's not the defensive player Blair was, but he's a better offensive player, I think, and more of an impact hitter for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not quite as interested in Adam Jones, the center fielder. But if you look at the lists that he's rising on as far as career, whatever's at bats, home runs, RBI, whatever it is that you want to pick, Adam Jones is up high on that list. And I think that if Adam Jones and the Orioles can work out a deal to keep him here in Baltimore, you know, he'll be one of the better players in franchise history, period. You know, regardless of what position he played. I think one of the things that's going to be important for Jones in the back end of his career is the management of his ego, right? If he can move off to one of the corner infields and play it capably and continue to be an impact bat, you know, at some point he's not going to be the cleanup hitter hitting the walk-off home run. He's going to be batting sixth, seventh, or eighth. But being a useful guy for the Baltimore Orioles, and I think we'll look back, you know, while he's putting on his green jacket, being voted into the Orioles Hall of Fame as, you know, one of the three best offensive productive players, if again, he and the Orioles can play their cards right.
Yeah, that's going to be a really interesting thing to see because, like I said, you know, with Machado, we kind of all know how that one's going to end. But Jones is certainly a much more open question as to whether he's back. And I think a lot of fans will be really devastated if he does leave.
We got a great taste today of why it's great to have him in orange and black.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Jake, thanks for joining us today. And hopefully the Orioles will do this a few more times this year.
Absolutely. Thanks very much for having me on. And if I may say, this podcast is great. Please keep doing it.
And that's going to do it for another edition of Locked On Orioles. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.